and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. Here we are then, Stevie. We're in 2025 now. We've done the New Year's Day podcast and we're cracking on with the year.
First day back for 2025, isn't it?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots and lots planned for this year. Going to be an exciting one.
I was looking at my diary. Diary? No one keeps a diary, do they? Calendar.
So.
On my phone, and a serious amount of things booked in already.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be cracking. We need to forge ahead for LRM Live in May. That's a big one, isn't it? That's going to be hopefully bigger and better than ever before.
If anyone hasn't listened to last week's podcast yet, so that's the New Year's Day special,
yes.
We listed quite a lot of events that we're actually attending.
We planned out pretty much every month, wasn't it?
We planned your year.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, for free.
Shall we have a couple of listeners' questions to kick us off?
Absolutely. People have been busy typing, haven't they?
They have,
over
yeah.
The Christmas period.
Been good. It's been good. So, first of all, Thorn Stops gets in touch. He says, "Hi, Martin and Steve. First of all, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year." A little bit late, but there you go. "I've been a listener of your podcast since the start, and it's been a great companion for on my commute to and from work in my daily driver and only car, a Discovery 1 300 TDI.
Good choice.
An excellent choice.
Yeah.
Every week I try and think of a good question to ask, but I come up short. However, I'd love to know what your favourite memories have been in a Land Rover thus far." That's a really good question.
Yes. Yeah.
He goes on to say, "I bought my Discovery this year, having searched for the right one for over 2 years. When I was given the Land Rover bug from a friend after we took his disco around Wales on a camping trip. Land Rover's a proper workhorse, plenty of character." He says it's called Trigger, after Trigger's broom, which is quite funny. "He works as a research technician in the plant science sector, so it gets used around site." That's really cool. So he literally uses it for everything. Discovery ones are fantastic in that respect, aren't they?
They are.
Hauls equipment around, uses it for green laning, and he's preparing it for overlanding. So he's well and truly stuck into the Land Rover life. And by the sounds of it, this Discovery is going to be a heck of a machine by the time he's finished. He's attached a couple of pictures and he said, "I agree, new number plates make a car look so much better. I've had original plates for mine remade and yeah, really, really smart Discovery." So thanks for getting in touch. In answer to your question, best Land Rover memories.
Well, he says best Land Rover memory in a Land Rover.
Yeah.
Well, so my best memory.
Well, actually, no, I'd love to know what your favourite memories have been in a Land Rover. So yeah, I guess.
Best memory in a Land Rover was going camping in an ex-military 90 to Wales and camping overlooking the coast. This is before Instagram was even a thing, but it would have been Instagrammable.
Did you even go then if you didn't put it on Instagram?
Yeah. In fact, yeah, Instagram wasn't even invented, but the sun was setting over this coast and it was me and my mate. He had his tent, I had mine, but we went in my naturally aspirated ex-military 90. It was just fantastic. I always remember that.
Yeah.
Just those camping trips that you just do with your Land Rover.
I agree. I think it's kind of similar to yours, actually. Last year or the year before, I can't remember. I think it was last year, doing Strata Florida in my Series 3. I was with Neil Watterson, obviously who I used to work with on LRO and then editor of Land Rover Life. We got there quite late and it was dark and it was lashing with rain. So we got to Strata Florida, which is obviously in Wales, put our tents up. The only space left on the campsite that we'd booked was like right at the bottom. And we thought, oh, it'll be nice and quiet down there. The reason there was no one down there is because all the water runs off the hillside and like collects in a pond.
Oh, crikey.
Luckily, I had my cot tent. So I was sort of elevated up off the ground anyway. And Neil found a dry bit to camp on. But it was like not ideal weather, but then there's a pub within walking distance, so we got set up, walked to the pub, had dinner, had a few beers, chatted with some of the other guys because there's all green laners that stay there, and then in the morning, despite the previous night's horrendous wind and rain, it was like a real crisp, like fresh morning. The sun came up like in the distance and it was warm enough to have the door tops off, and it was just an incredible day's green laning. And then the drive home even was fun because you're driving a Series 3 with the door tops off.
which is perfection.
That really sticks in my mind. And also, in fact, Shelsley Walsh last year, where we camped with the Britpark guys and had loads and loads and loads of beer on the side of the hill.
Ah, now that was perfection. And like I said, if you could bottle that and sell it,
yeah,
that as in like that whole experience, if camping was that all year round, that was perfection.
Definitely. So, I don't think they're going to hold camping for the general public this year, but you must go to the Lucas Classic at Shelsley Walsh this year when the date is announced. Yeah. It is fantastic.
Date is announced. It's not. We gave the date away last year, but
in the last
podcast,
one.
Right? But it's not announced. You can't get tickets yet.
Sure. Right. Okay. We'll keep an eye out for when they do go on sale because it's such a good day.
But the most for me, the most memorable and the most exciting things about Land Rovers is when you're going to look at another one.
Yeah.
So when I've gone to look at, like someone said, there's a project vehicle or something, that excitement you get.
Yeah, yeah.
And the knowledge that it doesn't matter how bad it is, you're going to buy it because you've decided.
You know, I tend to hold on to my Land Rovers a bit longer these days, but certainly when you've got it in your head and you've contacted whoever's selling it or you've arranged to go and look at it, that like feeling you get in your stomach when you're trying to sleep the night before, the excitement.
I love that.
How's it going to be? Yeah. How's it really going to be? And yeah, I completely agree with you on that. I've had a few that's like really, really. One of my discovery ones, in fact, was like that. The last one I owned, I bought from a lovely family in London, and I'd seen the pictures, and the pictures weren't great, but the description was pretty spot on. And it was just like, oh, yeah. I remember friend and I drove in the old LRO 90 before it was rebuilt to London, and it was a stiflingly hot day, and that had the heater was stuck on hot, so it had no fresh air coming into the cab. We had all the windows open and it was just an absolute sweat box. But we got there, chatted to the people and made a deal, and just driving it back, totally original Discovery One, even on 205 tyres. Didn't even have the wide tyres on it.
Oh, quirky. Yeah, yeah.
It had obviously been loved. And that warm evening, just the sunset, and me and my mate... I was driving the 90, he drove the Discovery back, but like passing each other on the motorway.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? It's all part of the fun. And that was a really good one as well, actually. God, they're all flooding back now.
Yeah, yeah. I've got, some great, great memories. I remember when I was 17, I went for a job. So I'd not long passed my driving test, and I worked for a farm that had two farms and a traditional bacon merchant.
Oh, right.
So for the first 5 years of my working life, I actually smoked bacon.
Did you?
Yeah.
Were you bringing home the bacon?
I was bringing home the bacon. And part of the reason why I wanted a job so much is the boss, the old man, it was like a father and son, it was a family business. He had a Series 3 Land Rover from 1972 and owned it from new.
Wow.
And Part of it was like I got to drive that Land Rover, and at the time I had a Vauxhall Chevette, my first car, and I wanted a job because there was an old Land Rover in the yard, get to drive the Land Rover.
Yeah,
used to use it a lot, and totally original cat flap, riveted riveted aluminium panels to hold the outer wing on the inner wing,
right?
Because it was all like battered,
patched back together.
Do you know what? That was the best driving Series 3 I've ever driven.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Normally farm vehicles are absolutely hanging.
It was always serviced, welded, but it was battered. 2.25 petrol, totally original. And I did quite a few miles in it.
Oh, good stuff.
I love driving that.
I remember the Land Rover I learned to drive in, which was my the farm where my dad worked. It was a 200 TDI 110 single cab, not a high cab, just a single cab 110 pickup. And it was... by the sounds of it, unlike that Series 3, completely thriving on neglect and abuse. And when you pulled away, there was so much slack in the driveline, and the fact that the A-frame ball joint was that worn that the rear axle would tilt about 10 degrees when you let the clutch up. It was horrendous.
Did that have the main shaft issue in the LT77?
Probably.
And it made that horrible clonk.
It still had drive, but thing was just...
Yeah, they used to spin out after a while, didn't they? Because they had no oil getting to them.
The transfer box input gear wasn't cross-drilled, so it had no lubrication.
That's
where it
right.
went on
yeah.
the back of the gearbox, and it would just wear out and eventually lose drive completely. But I still love driving it because it's a Land Rover.
And your memories, though.
Yeah, exactly. But
yeah, well, quite a few different memories, but yeah, some I can't share.
Listen to those another time, I'll be. Right.
Yeah, that's when we're in the pub.
Yeah, or at a show. So moving on, Mark Savage has got in touch. Mark Savage, all the way from Australia. He says...
G'day.
Indeed. You're fluent in Australia, you see.
Exactly, I've passed the test. When can I emigrate?
Hello, Martin and Steve. All the best for 2025. Keep up the great work with the magazine and the podcast. Well, thank you very much, Mark. He's just listened to the Christmas Day podcast and he says, you were right with the average currency exchange. The caveat to any recommendations over here in Australia. So for context, we were answering a question from a listener who was in Australia and had a budget to buy a Land Rover, preferably a Defender. New and used vehicles are priced significantly higher here than in the UK. And in return, the vehicles are far less likely to have significant rust, obviously, drier climate, hot climate.
Yes.
Parentes, which is what we sort of said would be a cool thing to buy.
I would go and look for one.
Steve's
yeah,
favourite from that sort of part of the world. He says they're highly sought after with a good reputation and therefore high value, so probably out of budget for our previous listener. He goes on to say, I don't have a Land Rover yet, but to answer your question on what you would own if you couldn't have a Land Rover, which is another thing we discussed, he would go for a Ford Everest. Everest? Yeah, Ford Everest, which is a superb package for the price. Best wishes, Mark.
So I saw that email when it came in, so yep. I Googled what a Ford Everest is.
Would you care to enlighten me? Because I've not actually seen one.
It looks a bit like, so over in the UK, we have, the double cab Ford Ranger.
Yeah.
It looks a little bit like that, but a passenger car. So a bit like a Ford Explorer.
Oh, okay.
I would say.
Oh, yeah. So sort of like the Nissan Navara. They also did the Pathfinder, didn't they? Which was basically Navara, but SUV.
The SUV version.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I really quite liked it. I went onto the Ford Australia website.
I've never seen it, but that is basically, it's the front half of a Ranger and the back half of an SUV, isn't it?
I quite like it.
I can see why you'd go for one of them, Mark. Fair play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sweet. Well, yeah, we both sort of, if it wasn't going to be a Parenti, a TDR Defender, which I think you probably still could get on budget if they don't hold their...
Yeah, and if they're rot free because they're in Australia.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, there's a lot of people, or certainly there was, I don't know what the market's doing now, importing Series 1s and 2s, early cars from Australia, over to the UK to recommission and sell, because obviously they're right-hand drive and they don't have tons of hideous...
Well, they were doing that for Classic Works, weren't they?
Yeah.
For the Reborn programme.
Yes. Quite a few came over from Australia.
Yeah. Start with the very best.
Indeed.
Cool.
Right. Next one.
We've got some more.
One more. And then we'll chat about something else. Joshua Dawson, he says, love listening to the podcast every week, usually in the quiet of the garage doing a mundane Land Rover job. He's currently soundproofing his 90. I have a growing family, so I'm looking at selling my current TD590 for a 110. I've had several Defenders in the past, from big lifted off-roaders to standard-ish road-going ones. However, I've never owned a 110. I have a budget of about £20,000, could stretch for the right Defender. But what would you recommend Defender 110 wise? I do less than 4,000 miles a year and would daily it 4 miles to work. MPG isn't a consideration. I've been looking at TD5s and newer Pumas, which is the TDCI. Something comfortable for the family, but also fun. I do green lane all my vehicles, but nothing extreme. Thanks, Joshua Dawson. What's your first take on that?
Easy answer.
Go on.
For 4 miles a day and 4,000 miles a year, TD5 XS 110.
Yeah, I don't think you can argue with that, really. I wouldn't go... I mean, yeah, he does mention that the value of the TD5s and both the 2.4 and the 2.2 TDCI, they're sort of averaging out now. They're all sort of around the same money.
Yeah, but people... It's because the TD5 arguably is a slightly better engine.
It depends what you're doing. I agree. I think that it suits the Land Rover better. I think the TDCIs, you could kind of tell that that's an engine that was never really designed for the Defender from the outset. But they do have the 6-speed box and they do have the slightly, obviously the revised dash, which you either see as a pro or a con. I wouldn't buy a 2.2 because that'll have a diesel particulate filter, which will...
It won't even go through its cycle, will it?
No, it gets very upset if you're doing 4 miles a day. To be honest, you need to be giving it a good blast at the weekend if you're only doing 4 miles a day every day, because it'll, any diesel won't enjoy that because it will never be fully up to temperature.
No. More reason to go for a TD5, I'd say.
Yeah. I think TD5. Get the latest... The newest TD5 you can on an 05 or an 06.
Yes.
Not highest spec you can. Obviously, you want it nice for the family. An XS would be great. Ooh, love that limited edition.
Another consideration to put in here.
Go on.
So, not a consideration, but if you were to go for a TDCI,
yeah.
Isn't the road tax on a TDCI over £700?
I think it depends on body style. I think,
yeah. So if it's commercial,
yeah.
So it could be a 110 with the van sides.
Yeah.
A station wagon with van. That's classed as a van still. But if it's a full station wagon.
Oh, you mean a utility?
Post 2006. Yeah, utility. Sorry, yeah. So if it's post 2006 in the UK, that the vehicle excise duty, as they call it, is over £700.
Yeah.
So if you went for the latest TD5, it wouldn't be. It'd be about £400.
Yeah.
Late 300.
That's obviously a
big, another consideration.
A big pro on the for the TD5. I think, as well as I know I always fly the flag for the mighty TDI, but I think the later TD5s, especially the nice spec ones like your XS spec with the nice Brunel front panels and the half leather, a peak Defender. They're really, really nice. So I'd go for one of them.
Yeah.
In a nice colour. Tonga green or Cairns blue or something like
Cairns
that.
Cairns blue's nice.
Cairns blue's lovely.
There you go.
There you go.
We've answered it.
Shall we seamlessly slip into, as the new issue has only been on the shelf for a week, feature of the week?
Go on then.
Shall we?
Yeah.
This week's feature of the week is the cover story on the latest issue of Land Rover Monthly.
Yes.
Which is all about how trends are changing in the Land Rover scene. And it showcases that using two rather lovely Defender 90s, which you'll see, no doubt, in the mag and on our social pages. So we got together with Jimmy DeVille off of the telly. And you may remember we did a podcast with Jimmy last year. Oh, God, it feels weird to say last year.
Last year. Don't forget to say.
Yeah. And so his Defender 90 that he's done up for overland travelling camping, with a cool sort of Tamiya inspired retro look. It's got sort of like the 80s Baja graphics on the side and a roof rack and a bracket for his kayak. We got that together with a soft top 90 that Britpart actually own. They call it their Goodwood 90 to sort of highlight the newest genres, if you like, of Land Rover modification, and to sort of talk about them in detail.
Okay.
Roy Duffy shot this and he did an amazing job. It looks really, really cool. We had the whole Goodwood estate to play with. It was awesome. It was an awesome, awesome day. So massive thanks to Paul Myers from Britpart, who also we've done a podcast with, for organising that. It's a really... I really enjoyed writing this one because it was sort of like you sort of get a bit retrospective. Do you know what I mean? You look back over the previous decades of how trends have come and gone in Land Rover modifying in the scene, if you like, and you look forward into where they're going, and that's sort of the idea behind this. So if I do say so myself, it's a really good read and there's some stunning photography. So please do grab a copy of the February issue of Land Rover Monthly and enjoy this fine feature in all its glory.
And yet you'd want to own both of those cars, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. Yeah,
either one or both, because they're both completely different uses.
Exactly. They're sort of, yeah, there's a yin and yang type. I'll be honest, until recently, I was always a bit sceptical and a bit turned off by the shiny paint, leather seat, Defender thing. I'd never really got it. But now, when you spend time with one and you actually use it, and it, especially in the surroundings of Goodwood, you're like, yeah, I can see why people like these.
Yeah, definitely.
They're essentially a sort of a nice classic car, or like a resto mod, to coin a phrase.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that, for example, the Brit part, well, in the future,
yeah,
that is exactly how I would want my project to look.
Well, it will look like that.
Yeah.
Perhaps
I'm
not
gonna spend a few £1,000, but yeah, but even still, that's, to me, that defines perfection.
I think so. I think as a
not
weekend, when you say that, it's soft, can be pretty warm.
Yeah.
They hold heat in well.
Probably no worse than a hardtop.
Yeah. No. But when you get it, when you build one to that standard, if you like, and it is comfortable, quiet, it's got decent audio equipment in it, and that you can just use it as an enjoyable driver to go out on the weekend,
yeah,
or whatever. You don't have to have it up to the door handles in mud to appreciate it for what it is. So it was quite a nice sort of eye opener for me, really, especially being around it and having a go in this soft top posh mohair hood sort of leather trim 90, because I was like, yeah, actually I do get this now. So
yeah, yeah,
it was good.
So not only are the vehicles evolved, you have teeth.
Yeah, that's maybe a bit deep, but yeah.
Not too deep.
There you go. So, should we go into product of the week?
Product of the year? Of the new year?
So far.
Yeah.
This is a great product, actually. I'm surprised it's taken someone this... Well, there's a bit of a backstory behind this, but I'm surprised it's taken this long for someone to do it. Mud UK, Mud Stuff. They do great products. You've got a load of their bits and pieces in your 90, haven't you?
Oh, I've got all their side panels to make the interior feel a bit more plush. So rather than just the bare aluminium sides, I've got all the mud side panels.
Yeah, they do.
And the speaker pods.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're in the rear corner.
Which I don't have any speakers in them yet, because that's a job I might ask you to...
You still don't have a radio in there, do you?
No wireless in mine.
No wireless.
I think the word wireless should be brought back.
Have you seen this?
Do you not think...
No, yeah, you're still using it, so it doesn't...
Turn the wireless down. Do you know when your grandmother used to say, turn that wireless down?
No.
Not heard that? You're too young.
Yeah. I do remember my grandma having a black and white TV.
Oh, okay.
But I don't remember the her saying about... I think the TV pretty much acted as her radio, I think. Oh, no, she did have a radio. I don't know. Is it a Browning radio? Browns or something? They're like wood finish, like veneer finish radio.
Everything back in the day was veneer.
Everything looks like a P38 dashboard.
That is it. Everything in the 70s and 80s was brown. So,
wow.
This is brown TVs. And yeah, I love that saying. Turn that wireless down.
Turn down the wires.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. But you've come up with a reversing camera for Defenders, which fits above on your rear washer jet.
Oh, it's a handy place to put it.
So it's nice and high up. It's
going
to stay out of all the muck and crud that gets thrown up, you know, up the back of the Land Rover, as it does this time of year. Easy to fit. It's got 150-degree viewing angle. It's IP68 weatherproof, so it's never going to let water in.
Unlike you, Adam.
Unlike the rest of the...
So basically the most waterproof thing on the vehicle is... The camera
is the reversing camera, and the housing is plastic, so you can either leave it black or you can paint it body color, so it's even more blend inny. All you need is obviously a head unit that supports a reversing camera, but the camera itself is taken care of. £249, easy to fit, looks great, tough, the ideal Defender product. Mudstuff.co.uk.
I wonder if you can see your tow hitch.
I don't know, actually.
That's really handy.
It should do. Yeah, because it must point down that far, because you want to see it when as you reverse up to barrier and walls,
course,
things like that. So, yeah, it doubles as a trailer hitch.
Really handy. And, of course, Mud do all the radios as well. And you can buy all the panels.
Yes.
So you can have double DIN,
with
single
a nice,
DIN radio panels.
Nice big screen.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. Get yourself one of them if you've got a Defender and you want to see behind you.
Yeah, I kind of want one.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
So I went out New Year's Day. We went out for a New Year's Day walk, as many other people did.
I didn't.
Did you not?
No.
You lazy so-and-so.
No, I didn't leave the premises.
However, it looked a bit grey and a bit moody on the way there. We took the dog out.
Hello, you. Moody.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah. Only a few miles from home, there's a nice place to walk the dog. So we got out. The sky looked a bit unsure. There could have been a bit of precipitation in the air. We got to the furthest point away from the car, which is a good few miles. And then the wind picked up. You know how windy it was.
Yeah,
and it just, at the heavens opened, it was like sideways rain. We were soaked. All for it, like me, my wife and the dog, absolutely saturated in water. And I was like squeegeeing the dog off before he got back in the car. But I had obviously wet coat, wet jeans, wet boots, everything was full of water. But as we were driving back, I thought, the Freelander's just such a loyal
companion. You love that thing.
I really do. Like, there's certain things about it I wish were better. I wish it had a bit more character as a Land Rover. But as a
bit more Discovery 4-esque.
Just a bit more like, doesn't feel that special sometimes, but it just does everything so well. And it compared to a lot of other cars, it wants for so little. But I did think, like, what is the most overrated Land Rover? Because Freelanders, we know,
Would you say it's quite an underrated Land Rover then?
I still don't
think... you don't know.
They get the appreciation they deserve. And I think a lot of people turn their noses up at Freelanders because they are like the entry-level, smallest model. But then I think a lot of those people have never experienced one. Be that a Freelander 1 or a 2. I think they all have things going for them that aren't necessarily appreciated by people with the bigger models.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But yeah, for me, this is going to go down like a lead balloon, I'm sure. I think the Defender is overrated.
What?
Yeah, because if you actually spend time in one and you drive one...
Oh, they're terrible.
They are not a good car. They're not. I've owned loads of them. And every time I'm like... I remember I had three Defenders before I owned a Discovery 1. And I bought this Discovery 1. That's the one I bought off the scrappage scheme all those years ago. Saved it.
Well, intercepted it.
Yeah. I bought it off the people that were trading it in at the dealer. And I drove this Discovery 1 for like a week. And I was like, my back doesn't hurt. I can listen to the radio. I'm not soaking wet. It's doing quite good miles per gallon.
More than defensible.
It's just as good off-road. Why didn't I do this years ago?
I know what you mean. But more people... No. So when I owned Discovery 1s, Discovery 2s, Discovery 3s, not one person asked me about the car.
Yeah.
But when you're in a Defender, people stop and talk to you.
There's no denying that Defenders are obviously...
Why are they so crap?
Well, they're a farm vehicle, aren't they? They're a workhorse that people have developed into. I mean, we sound like we're contradicting ourselves here, because I've just said that I now understand why people make them quiet and fit soft tops and leather and all that. But as a fundamental vehicle for driving around and doing vehicle stuff with, you compare it to anything else in the range, they're not very good, are they? Like,
so you're just like, yeah.
The thing that they're undeniably... very, very cool. I think that's why people love them, especially
If they weren't how they are, we probably wouldn't have a magazine devoted to it.
Well, the thing is, obviously...
devoted to restoring them and keeping them going or making them better or making them quieter.
The aftermarket has obviously flourished off the back of the issues with them, and there are plenty. Having just said the Freelander 2 is fantastic at everything, but it lacks character, the Defender has character in bucket loads. And it's, you know, there's no mistaking a Defender. You can see one from half a mile away and you know what it is. That side of things I totally get. And, you know, I do, whilst I'm ribbing them and saying that they're overrated, they are, you know, I don't regret owning a single one of them. They're all brilliant.
And you'll own another one in time.
Maybe. The Series 3 scratches that itch for me now. In fact, if anything, the Series 3 feels a little bit more special to me than the Defender now, because it's older and it's, you know, you can lift the door tops off and get the back window open, and it feels a lot more feels a bit more special to me than like a diesel Defender.
But fair enough.
The only I know security is a big thing. We've actually done a feature on in the mag recently on Land Rover security and how to do yours up like Fort Knox, so it doesn't, you know, go walkabouts. But I would still worry if I parked a Defender most places that I'd come back and it wouldn't be there. Even with all the security measures you put in place, if someone wants it badly enough, unfortunately, they will have it.
Yeah, they will. Yeah.
Which is sad, really. It's a sad state of affairs, isn't it? But I'd always, I don't feel like I'd suffer with that anxiety quite so badly with a lot of other Land Rovers.
Do you know what? One of the most underrated, unloved, not even unloved, but those who own them, is a 2B Ford Control. When was the last time you saw one of them at a show?
LRM Live, probably.
Did you see one?
Yeah. We had one in the arena, didn't we?
A 2B Ford Control?
Yeah, I'm sure it was a 2B Ford
Control. Or just a Ford Control.
No. It was definitely a 2B. It was a... Well, it wasn't a 101. And we spoke about the differences between them.
No, so I didn't see it.
Yeah, it was a... I can't remember what engine.
I was probably busy working.
It had a more... Yeah. It had a more modern engine in it. I spoke to the guy. If you own that Ford Control, get in touch if you listen, because I'd like to get some more details.
Or if you own a 2B Ford Control, get in touch.
Yeah, why not?
Where are they?
They're a rare machine, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think they're one of those now, similar to like classic Range Rovers, where people don't really use them that much. And understandably, you know, we always spoke about 101s earlier on, didn't we? The actual idea of owning one and the aspiration to have a 101, because they are like the coolest.
I would love one, like a soft top one.
Yeah, like a GS, so general service, but actually driving one any distance?
Horrendous. I've driven Land Rover's own one, left-hand drive.
Oh, yeah.
And to get in, you have to get your foot the other side of the steering column, and then you've got this awkward sort of angle of where the gear selector is, the gear stick. And they're just sort of hunched over the steering wheel.
Yeah. And your feet, you need like ballet shoes to get the pedals because they're like, they're really, all scrunched up
really, yeah,
into a tiny little...
Onto a tall four one.
Yeah.
But my mate Pete used to daily a 2B Ford Control.
Legend.
Yeah. 45 miles an hour flat out.
How long did he daily it for?
About 6 or 8 months.
Still, that's good going, isn't it? Really?
And he used to drive 15 miles each way to work.
Wow.
It had a... I asked him earlier because I couldn't remember. 3 litre... diesel Mazda / Perkins 4182 in it.
Oh, you're right.
I'm really low geared.
Oh, I bet it was. Yeah, I bet it ran out of puff.
Broke down once, right? I don't think he's going to listen to this podcast. I don't know.
We'll find out, won't we?
He broke down once midway to work. So probably 7 miles from home, 7 miles from work.
Right.
How do you get that recovered then? Well, you don't have breakdown cover. It's too heavy.
You get your mate Steve to come and tow you.
I wasn't telling that thing.
What are friends for?
Do you know what? This is really hilarious, right? So he had this, he had a starter motor problem with it, and it wouldn't engage, whatever. Anyway, my other mate was there. He's called Steve. He's a mechanic. And what they did was they, you know, when you arc the starter?
Yeah.
And it turned the engine over, but it went fired into life, but it was still in gear.
Ah.
Right? They weren't in the car. They weren't in it.
I've done that.
Right? It went blah, 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 blah. And as it lunged forward, 2 or 3 lunges, it bumped into his mum, her Mark 1 Astra. We're going back a few years.
Yeah, it sounds right? Like it.
It bumped the Mark 1 Astra and then proceeded to push that up the drive as well.
Yeah, well...
But I was, and they were only a split second from the Mark 1 Astra going out on the road.
Crikey. Did his mum find out?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, she hollered out the window.
Unhappy.
She was not best pleased. Didn't damage the car.
Oh, that's all right.
But then. There was a bit of a panic. Can you imagine? She was like...
Well, once a diesel that size gets idling, there's you know, you've got to...
But it was like quickly. Mid... idle. So actually, you know, like
just firing on one or two.
Yeah,
like
just put like lunging forward.
Yeah, just chugging.
Anything happened is like slow motion until this car and then he went out on the road. Because that car would have been T-bones on the road as well.
I bet. Yeah, I did that once. I had the first ever Range Rover Classic I bought. Boris, it was called. It was a great car. I loved Boris. was a 1985, so it was a 3.5 on carbs, automatic, slow as you like. Camshaft was round on it. It wouldn't pull the skin off a rice pudding. But it was at my mate's one day, we were messing about, and I couldn't get it to start. It wouldn't turn over. Kept the key. I was like, oh, maybe the ignition barrel's worn. I don't know what's happening. Turns out, well, as I found out when I was underneath it, arcing it, starter motor out with a screwdriver, and the engine didn't start, but obviously the starter turned the engine over. It was actually in drive. I got it in neutral on the on the selector, but it hadn't knocked it. The interlock, so you can't start it in drive or reverse or gear, was still in, even though it showed as being in neutral. So I'm under there, like, getting my legs run over by arcing the thing out.
So careful, haven't you, doing that?
Yeah. Well, luckily, like I say, I didn't have the ignition on, so it just started moving, and then I noticed. But yeah.
Did you name that Boris?
Yeah.
How?
I can't remember.
How did it come with that name?
I can't remember.
I've never once named a Land Rover.
I think that's the only one I've ever named.
Those are people named a Land Rover.
Just seemed like a Boris. Do you know what I mean?
Well, he had like floppy hair.
No.
Like Boris Johnson.
Oh, no. I don't think I was aware who Boris Johnson was when I owned that thing. I don't know why it seemed like a Boris, but I just called it Boris. It was a great car. I'd put a 2-inch lift on it, and it had 33-inch Maxxis Buckshot mudders on it. And I cut the arches out and put wider arches on it.
I've never done that.
And then looking back, I shouldn't have done any of that because it was actually quite nice and original. But back then, Range Rovers weren't worth anything. So,
no.
There you go.
Most of my Land Rovers have remained relatively standard.
Mm.
I think I like the OEM look.
The thing is, you, especially, again, this is harking back to the trend, the cover story on the February issue. It was the done thing back then to do suspension lifts, body lifts, big tyres, dislocations. It had rose jointed rear arms on it as well, which was a terrible idea because they were no good for the road. But yeah, that was like what you did.
So you, yeah, so there was a time where you raised Land Rovers, then there was a time that everything was lowered and tuned.
Yeah, right, a lot of the TD5 crowd, didn't they?
Went
huge horsepower and 20-inch alloys and things like that.
And now it's kind of like,
it's kind of a sort of like heritagey classic.
It is.
Sort of vibe, which is cool, I think. And obviously overlanding is massive. But yeah, what else? I think now I've only ever owned one, but I do believe the P38 is a great all-rounder. I think it's almost as good as a Discovery as an all-round vehicle. And I think the reason that they have such a bad reputation is because when they came out, everyone was a bit like, you know, they weren't that reliable because the technology hadn't been developed far enough when the thing was put into production, basically. But now, with everything documented and people know how to fix them and rebuild the air suspension valve blocks and fix the leaky heater matrix O-rings and, you know, get on with a decent engine, I think they're a proper solid car. So I still think they're a little bit underappreciated, along with the entire Freelander family. One thing I wish I liked more was Discovery Sport.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I borrowed one when I worked at the dealership. I borrowed one for, I was away, it was a long weekend. We went down to Devon in one. Brand new. It was a 2-litre Ingenium. It made it there and back, which is good. But I just couldn't fall in love with it. It just felt too much like a normal car. It didn't feel...
No, I agree. I'd rather buy a Freelander 2 than a Discovery Sport.
Well, indeed, Alistair Cusick, our esteemed photographer, is in that very quandary at the moment. His daily driver packed up and he's in the market for something new, and he wants the latest, nicest Freelander 2 he can find. But he's sort of like, oh, do I go for a Discovery Sport? And I just don't think they're as practical. I don't like the interior as much.
Trouble is, a lot of people think, Alice is probably exempt from this, but the general motoring public think, oh, it's an older car, so therefore it's going to be, like, unreliable.
But the late Freelander 2s are still, like, 10 grand plus.
They are fucking strong money.
Which is encouraging, but he sends me links quite regularly, and then I sort of have a look through them. He gets a second opinion or whatever. It's surprisingly difficult to find one that hasn't got holes in the service history. So, like COVID and that, obviously, when it was harder to get anything done.
Yeah, but you see,
I told him to not. I said, honestly, the engines in them are so hardy and so proven, I wouldn't necessarily.
If that's missed one oil change,
yeah,
that engine's going to go, oh, do you know what? If I only have had that oil change, I wouldn't have scored balls.
The thing is, a lot of the ones he's looking at are nice low mileage vehicles as well. So it's not like it's done 30,000 miles on one oil service. Do you know what I mean? It's still probably under the mileage for that service. So
modern oil is better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people say, you know, you should change the oil if it's. If you're starting up a Land Rover that's been sat for 5 years, then you should change the oil, and you should. But to get it running, you don't need to.
No.
It's still lubricant. It's still, you know, as long as it's not full of water, it'll still be absolutely fine. And like you say, especially now, modern oils are so much more developed than old, like, mineral crushed up sea creatures that you used to put in your
engine. Oh, yeah. 50 years ago. Some of the stuff I used back in the day.
Yeah, but... I think, as far as I can tell, I don't think he's gone out and bought one yet, but the search is continuing. So if you've actually got an SD, he wants an SD4, the highest spec he can find, so HSE or SE would probably do.
Mine was an SD4, SE.
They're lovely.
They're good car.
Punchy cars.
Yeah, which one was just better than it was.
Yeah, you had unfortunate luck with yours, but
yeah, definitely.
If you've got one that you want to sell and it's as lower mileage as possible when it has got a complete service history, drop us an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk, and we'll forward it on to Alistair to have a look at.
There you go.
So that's our bit of community service done for this podcast. Anything else that springs to mind that you think is over or underrated? Let's have an overrated one from you.
Full fat new Range Rover,
the latest model.
Yeah,
do you think?
Yeah,
on what basis?
Don't know, just don't like the look of it.
Great.
I don't know. No.
What I would say is it seems like ever since I said this on Instagram the other day, or a couple of months ago now, which is still the other day, isn't it, when you talk about something in the past tense, the L322, the models following that, they've...
Oh, I thought you were bringing...
No.
Right.
But they've got less and less Range Rover to look at. They've become more rounded, and now... The latest shape just kind of looks blobby.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's overrated.
So,
like, if money was no object, I don't think I'd go and buy one.
No, I wouldn't.
No.
I'd have a new Defender. I wouldn't have a Range Rover.
No, I wouldn't. No.
I'd even have a... Discovery 5's grown on me.
In the right colour it has.
Dark colours. Dark blue with, like, silver or black wheels. They look lovely.
They do. And of course, you know, guys like Urban, they do the centralised number plate conversion.
Yes.
For the rear. That helps them.
Yeah, I'm kind of not that fussed by the offset rear plate now, because I think when you do put a central rear plate on them, they just look like a Discovery Sport.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No, not a bad thing, but yeah, they have to be the right wheel and tyre combo. If you see a Discovery 5... Like, say, a farm owns, and it's got, like, BF Goodrich all-terrains on it.
Yeah.
They look really cool.
Yeah.
Tyres make them look better.
Oh, what make of the wheels? They're not Compromotives. Oh, someone will know. They're like a split six-spoke alloy. They might be OZs. Discovery 5 on them with, like, BF Goodrich all-terrains or something.
Are you talking about... Oh, I know the wheel you mean.
Oh, that's going to drive me mad. They're not like Braid or something. But anyway.
No.
They're like a motorsport-inspired alloy wheel, though, and they look really tough, like a real, like, Dakar racer
style. Yeah, I know the wheel, but it's... man.
I'll look it up.
They're 180-odd quid a corner, aren't they?
Probably, and the rest.
No, they're more than that. No.
But
1,000 quid. I think 1,000 quid for set four. Ecos? No.
Nah, I don't know. It doesn't ring a bell. Anyway, if you put the right wheels on one, same as a Discovery 4, you can instantly improve it with a roof rack and the right wheels. Discovery 4 with six-spoke Compromotive alloys and decent chunky tyres and a pro-speed roof rack is perfection.
It is perfection, yeah.
You will not get a better all-round Land Rover.
Would you say the Range Rover Velar is underrated? Because no one talks about them.
That is true.
No one talks about it.
If you're listening to this and you own a Velar, new shape Velar... Get
a Velar.
What do you think?
Well, when you say new shape, you mean like...
Not the late, any Velar. Get in touch. Let us know what you think of it. I had one on test for a week and I was impressed by it. I just wish all the new models had slightly, they just differentiated slightly because all the interiors are so similar.
They're all very similar, yeah.
The Velar drives great. It drives like a car, really, which I suppose it is. Got a low roof line. You sit down. What I do like about it a lot is how low you sit in it. It feels kind of, it feels like a performance car.
Yeah. So our boss had one, didn't he? Comfy car.
Yes.
So I've driven a fair few miles in the Velar. He's got rid of it now because it was like a 3-year lease thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which I suppose a lot of them are.
Yeah. But he had what I class S, you know, like on the Comfy car thing, the poverty spec. Can't even say that. But he had the smaller wheels option, didn't he? Well, they're not.
I think he literally saw the list of optional extras and just went, nah, you're all right.
Because company car tax is an absolute fortune on them anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, the wheel and the tyre was like, it drove really well.
Well, that's it, isn't it?
40 yards to the gallon, it was good.
You sacrifice looks for comfort with wheels, don't you? You either go for a smaller wheel, which rides nicer but doesn't look quite as cool, or you go for a bigger wheel, which suits the car better perhaps, and look really, and they don't ride as well because you haven't got enough tyre.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've got a bit of experience.
What was it like? I can't remember what the colour's called. Is it not Bourneville. It was brown. It was metallic brown.
It's just a 70s,
beat around the bush.
It was brown.
Yeah, it was brown. Like my nan's radio.
Yeah, that car needed some veneer. But TVs and radios were veneered, weren't they? It was like veneer
finish. Yeah, that's exactly it. But it was
corduroy curtains.
Metallic brown. And it did have, yeah, it would have been like 17s or 18-inch wheels on it. And it wasn't the most desirable spec Velar. I bet when the lease company got that back, they weren't falling over themselves with excitement about how easy it would be to sell.
I was surprised at his colour choice.
Yeah.
When he had it, as were most of the people that still ridicule him. A funny story, right? Because I know he'll probably listen to this podcast.
Right.
So,
Hi, John.
Hi, John. If you listen. I'm going to tell you a story, right? Because this is, right, so we're reliant on, people these days are quite reliant on technology, particularly reversing sensors, right?
Okay.
So the tyre garage, when it went in for tyres, because they obviously lease car, they do all the tyres and the thing, they turned off the reversing sensors.
Right.
So he's parked up in the car parking space by the Printworks factory.
Right.
Who goes to, I don't think you worked here then.
No.
So considering he parks there all the time, he reverses out, waiting for the beep, 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 as it comes up to the factory wall. And of course, he just kept reversing, didn't he? smashes into the wall. I'll show you when we walk by later, where there's a mark on the wall. Still a mark, yeah. And it like, oh man, it had to go to the body shop. I forget how much the bill would have been.
Yeah.
$2,000 or $3,000, I think.
Wow.
But the damage.
Just for having this parking sensor.
Yeah. And then, well, who's liable? Well, the driver's liable.
Yeah.
Sorry, John.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned it for a while, so I thought we'd mention it on the podcast because no doubt he'll listen to this.
That's a story I didn't know. So, yeah. Yeah,
I'll show you the mark on the wall.
I'd love to see it. I'll take a picture and put it up on our socials. It shows how reliant people are on technology, but also you can't really blame him because you just get used to it, don't you?
Yeah, you went beep, 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 and you knew where to stop, but of course that didn't happen. Back to the
oh, well, there you go. Little project update. Should we do a little project update?
Whose project? Yours?
Both. First of all.
Yeah, because we worked, didn't we, between Christmas and New Year.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well, yeah, it was. We've been forging ahead with content for our YouTube channel and, of course, the magazine. My Series 3 is now complete.
Yeah.
It's finished. We went up the road in it.
Oh, yeah, you weren't hanging around, actually.
I am so... You don't with the V8. You drive it flat out everywhere.
Yeah,
it sounds fantastic. I'm really chuffed with it. I spent yesterday just fine-tuning a couple of bits and pieces, doing a bolt check, adjusting the door strikers so the doors shut perfect.
They weren't perfect.
No, they're more perfect now.
Wow.
A few other little bits, but I'm so happy to have it back on the road. Everything about it is better. The steering's better, the brakes are better, it's quieter, it's not rusty.
It does feel like a completely different motor.
Yeah. The new hinges the later Defender hinges, and the fact the bulkhead has both its feet on it now has, surprise, surprise, really improved the way the body stays completely solid. It doesn't flex about and rattle and squeak. And
what made you choose those hinges, out of interest?
They were free.
Okay.
Do you know actually what they're off?
Yeah, no.
The old LRO Defender 110.
Oh, okay.
So it's quite nice to sort of carry that spirit forward.
Okay.
And also they were in Neil's garage, so now so my just, Land Rover. Because we fitted Optimil ones on that for the magazine.
Oh, okay.
When I was on that. No, so, going begging.
Considering when I went in your Series 3 at Malvern, I drove it, didn't I?
The first Malvern I took it to.
It was bad.
It was horrendous.
I said that's, I mean, no disrespect, but it felt like the worst Series 3 I've ever driven.
I wouldn't disagree with
that. It was harsh. The springs didn't move. Nothing. It was rattly, noisy. I don't know how you physically drove it for 3 hours to get to Malvern.
Noise-cancelling headphones.
And
good music.
I don't think I could. But going up the road the other day, what a transformation.
Totally different animal. And actually, it's given, although I haven't, things like the seat box, I'll probably replace the seat box at some point because it is a bit battered. But painting the gearbox tunnel and the floor plates and getting rid of as much of that horrible lime green paint inside it as possible has made it so much nicer. And of course, the new truck cab back with opening windows, they don't rattle anymore. I'm really, really chuffed with it. But that's going to be old news soon because we're making a plan for your project.
Because the very next day after filming at yours, we went to mine and I showed you the predicament that I am in.
Yes.
So
there'll be a video on that soon as well.
All last year and all of our podcasts on a weekly basis, you'd bring up the fact that I've got this unfinished project.
Yeah.
And you can see that where I've gone with it.
Yeah.
So currently rolling chassis sits there. The transfer box has just come back from my mate Pete, who kindly rebuilt it for me. I supplied him with all the parts. He's rebuilt it. Got the reconditioned Ashcroft LT77 sitting there.
Yep.
All the bits.
A lot of the pieces are there.
All the pieces are there. But then you inspected the pit of despair, which is at the back of the garage, which is where all the wings and the panels and the crap, basically.
Yeah.
And you can see where I've got a bit disorganised.
Yeah, so, yeah.
It's scary, isn't it?
It's scary, but it was good to take stock of what you've got, what you haven't got, what needs repairing, what doesn't, what's good to go. And this year, we're going to make a good dent in that project.
Absolutely. No, it needs to move forward. Got me thinking about the rear tub because I did a lot of repair work. But yeah, to get that to the standard I think it needs to be.
Yeah.
Or I would like.
The thing is,
it's Land Rover for life, isn't it? It's a Land Rover for life. Have a nice bulkhead.
Yeah.
Or if I replace the bulkhead with an e-coated one or galvanised, you've got it forever.
New doors.
Chassis, the doors are all galvanised frames. It doesn't need...
Basically, it's it's probably 60 to 70% of the parts you've collected are either new or lovely condition. And if you fitted older bits that you've repaired, it would bring down the whole overall condition of it, I think. So you need to put your hand in your pocket and buy some new stuff. Anyway, we don't want to give too much of this away.
No, so keep an eye on our YouTube because talking openly to camera then about it.
Yeah, no, and you get a good view of a good sort of idea of what bits you have got and what bits you need and what, you know. So keep an eye out for that. That will probably be out before the next instalment of my series rebuild, which will probably be weird, but that's what we're doing.
What it showcases, though, Martin, is that we are the same as people listening to this and who read the magazine.
Yeah.
We eat, live and breathe it.
Yeah.
And we also come up against issues, don't we?
We are just...
Crime and money is still an issue for us, just as it is for most people.
Absolutely. Just normal guys doing Land Rover stuff.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, some better than others, but I do need. And you said one of the things you said to me in my shed the other day is, do it. Don't get overwhelmed by it.
Yeah,
and immediately your mind races off into all the things that haven't been done or need to be done or parts that need to be sourced, and it is overwhelming.
It's trying to bite it off in little chunks.
Yeah,
and
you can
keeping the once you start to see progress, you'll want to carry on with it.
Basically, definitely
your enthusiasm will be reignited. And anyway, we don't want to talk too much on here about it because people should watch the YouTube video where you'll get a much, much better understanding of where you're at with it. But this year we're going to, I don't think it'll be done this year, but we'll make a really, really, really good dent in it.
Yeah, I noticed on the logbook the other day, it was registered, I think, in July 1985. So we're 40 years old.
Oh, cool. This year. Awesome.
So it's time to... Yeah, it deserves to be put back on the road.
Definitely.
The original owner, you know, you used to drive that to Morocco and all sorts.
Really?
Yeah. It's been a history. It's done some work.
Wicked. Well, I think for now, keep an eye on the YouTube channel. Keep an eye on the magazine, of course. You'll see it in there as well. Don't forget to follow us on socials. Please leave a little rating for the podcast because it really helps us and it helps us carry on. Keep the good... fighting the good fight and keeping putting out lots of nice Land Rover content for the lovely people.
Something else we were going to mention.
Go on.
We mentioned before we started this recording this podcast was live, YouTube live.
Oh, yeah. We might do some YouTube lives. We might go live on YouTube probably in the evenings, maybe once a month. Crack open a nice chilled beverage. And if you want to join us and join in with a bit of Land Rover chat, let us know if you think that's a good idea. Drop us an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk. If it's something people would like to see and get involved with, and we can have a bit of back and forth and answer a few questions and see what you're up to, then drop us an email, let us know, and we'd be up for doing that, wouldn't we?
Yeah, do it from one of our workshops.
Yeah.
Or doing 1 month in yours, 1 month in mine.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
We should drink beer at the same time.
I think so. It'd be rude not to, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Wicked. Yeah, so drop us a little email if you think that's a good idea, and if you join us for a little drink. Sound good? Yeah. In the meantime, though, thanks ever so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye for now.